God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you. Everyone is allowed to unmute as they see fit for the moment. We'd just like to say hello. First 30 days.
My name is Caroline. I'm an alcoholic.
Caroline, welcome.
I'm BJ. I'm an alcoholic in my first 30 days.
Hi, BJ. Anybody else? All right. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to this step discussed tonight. So this evening, we're talking about step three. Please welcome our panel. We have Laura and Melissa. So I'll read the first paragraph on page 6D, and the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Page 60, let me read the step. Step three says, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Oh, I should share my screen too. I gotta quit smoking dope before I chair an AA meeting. Page 60, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. Melissa.
Thanks, David. Hey, everybody. My name is Melissa. I'm an alcoholic. Guess the qualifying stuff to get out of the way. My sobriety date is September 8th, 2014. I have a sponsor. She is very aware that she sponsors me. And I sponsor other women in this program. I also have a home group, Westside Young and Sober. We meet on Zoom on Tuesday nights at 7:30. We use a different literature. We use the 12 and 12. This week we'll be talking about Tradition 7. So if you want to hop on over tomorrow night and get involved in learning about some traditions, shameless plug for my home group. Come check us out. You know, we spent the first 59 pages plus the doctor's opinion before this paragraph talking about why I'm an alcoholic, trying to convince me that I'm an alcoholic, and then talking to me about this higher power thing. My experience was before I came to AA that I could not stop drinking when I finally wanted to stop. I had gotten to the point where I was drinking around the clock. My story is not one of consequences with the law or, you know, woe is me. I was employed, had been employed with the same employer for 13 years, hadn't lost any of that material stuff. I've never been arrested. I've never had a DUI. I have a lot of yets. But I had attempted to take my life a couple of times because I was so desperate to just not exist the way I was existing anymore. I was completely empty inside. And I was using alcohol to just drown that, and alcohol stopped working. I literally was drinking just to keep from shaking and having panic attacks at that point. It gave me no relief. And by that point, you know, I wanted to stop, and I couldn't. I would wake up in the morning and have to drink in order to brush my teeth, in order to take a shower, in order to drive to work. I would drive to work with a huge glass of vodka and Red Bull. Like, these are just not things that normal people do. And that was what my life had become. And I was, you know, I was young. I was 32 years old. I was like, how on earth have I gotten to this place? And, you know, I couldn't quit. So, you know, I can't manage my own life, and I'm alcoholic. I got that. Probably no human power could have relieved my alcoholism. I chose to go to inpatient treatment, and was there for about 3 weeks, and then did outpatient, came to AA for a month, and went on my merry way, and stayed dry for about 6 months, and then I drank again. No human power. Rehab didn't keep me sober. You know, that wasn't working. So, you know, I get to see God could and would if he were sought. This wasn't something I tried. You know, all right, I've checked a lot of boxes. I've tried a lot of things, my own willpower, my intelligence, my determination, my stubbornness, none of that is keeping me sober at this point. And I don't know what else to do. So I guess I'm going to give this a shot. And I guess I'm going to trust that these people that I've been come into meetings with and watching things change in their lives, I see it working for them. Maybe it'll work for me. I'd like to say I came to this realization within, you know, the first few weeks that I came back to AA. I was about 5 months sober when I came to this realization. 5 months sober without relief, without working the steps, basically just going to a lot of meetings and doing a lot of fellowshipping kept me sober for a little while. It didn't keep me very sane. I was still very crazy in the head. Just it wouldn't shut off. And again, I came to another jumping off place. Like, are you going to trust this? Are you going to try it? And it's, you know what? Nothing else is working. Why don't I just try this? So I got a sponsor in more than just name. Got a sponsor that I would sit down and read the book with, and we went through the first pages, and then we got to this point, and then I kind of stopped again, but I'll share more about that in the next few paragraphs. So thanks.
Thank you. Laura?
Hey, everybody. My name is Laura, and I'm an alcoholic. So this is just a quick summary of step one and step two, and asking me if I can agree with these two points before I make this third step decision. And you know, there's a many, many pages before we get to this point that I have a chance to either relate or decide that I don't agree that I have the same problem that they're talking about in this book. But thankfully for me, by the time I got to this part in the book with a sponsor, and that didn't happen for me immediately. I had many different ways of going through the steps with some other types of sponsorship before I found somebody that just read the book with me. And the first time that I had somebody read the book with me this way, it really made a huge difference. And number one, to see if I can even really relate and identify with the basic text. When I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was really, really young. And I was in a lot of trouble. But I think somewhere in the back of my mind, when I got here when I was 23, that I had some reservations that it wasn't really forefront of my mind, but what ended up happening is after 5 years in sobriety, I went back out, and I had the thought like that. The thought came to me was that, well, maybe I was just young and dumb before, and now I'm grown up and I'm more responsible, and maybe I can, maybe I can take a drink safely now that I'm older and I had this head full of AA, you know? And so that's what happened to me. So by the time I don't even know how I made it back, but I made it back and I immediately got back in with a big book sponsor and just started going through the process all over again. So, you know, to concede that for point A, that I am an alcoholic. So I identify with the symptoms of alcoholism, which is explained very, very well in the doctor's opinion and in the preceding chapters, but that just the basic for me is no matter how long it's been since I picked up the last drink, if I pick up a drink again, within a short period of time of drinking alcohol, I will develop a craving for more and more and more and more and more. And even when I want to stop, I find that I can't. Or if I can stop, I can't stay stopped. So no matter how many times I swear it off, I'm not going to do it again, I always find myself picking up that drink again. And when I drink, although I tell you I want to drink like a lady, my body doesn't jive with that. Like I drink to get just tore out the frame. I love alcohol, just makes me turn into this powerful, you know, like invincible person. And it's, I love the effect that alcohol has on me at the time. But what I don't like is the consequences that always follow for me. And I'm one of those people that I always get caught. I always get in trouble and like, I will burn the city down. That's what happens to me when I drink. I'm not a good girl. So it was pretty easy for me to identify with the symptoms of what happens to me physically when I drink. And then as I get into to identifying with alcoholism, because it's not just about the physical reaction that I have to alcohol, it's everything that happens in my head before I pick up the drink in the first place. That's what gets me. My thinking is not normal. I am a very emotional, sensitive, reactive human being. And for whatever reason, you know, God love my parents. They did the best that they could with me, but I was not naturally somebody that had a lot of good, healthy coping skills. And, you know, which was why alcohol was such a go-to for me when I discovered it. At a young age, it helped me fix what I was feeling on the inside. And, when I can't drink, when I can't just find something to check out and numb out, I'm stuck with me and I'm stuck with this brain that goes a million miles per minute and always, always has to try to figure out what's going on with you. Why did you do that? Why did you say that? And I make it something negative and it's always something negative about me. And then I have to do something. I have to react. I have to take action. I have to control. I have to change it, fix it, make it go away. And when you're stuck with a brain like that, leads to crazy town and it leads to stepping on people's toes and making things worse. And then all of a sudden it sounds like a drink is a really good idea again. And so that's why every time I've tried to stay sober by myself without any help, it never lasts for me, not for very long. I got to do something about the way that I feel again. So getting to point two, that probably no human power could have relieved me of my alcoholism. Gosh, you know, I tried. I tried to have the relationship that would make it all feel better, make it all go away. Moving, changing locations, switching my friends, you know, like I'll just stop hanging out with the bad kids. I'll hang out with normal people who go to school and get good grades and can work a 9-to-5 job and do happy hour and go home and not get arrested. Like if I could just be like them, I'll be okay. But problem is, like, I'll hang out with them for like a week. And then by the second week, I'm like trying to get them to do illegal shit with me. Just like, it just doesn't work. You know, I tried self-help books. I've been to counseling. I've been on just about every anti-anxiety and antidepressant they could give me. I've been to rehabs. I've been to ASAP a million times. I know it so well. I could teach the classes, you know. I never tried church before coming to AA because I was terrified to walk in there because I thought that they would be able to see how dirty I was. So I never tried church until I got sober. But the weird thing is, I think somewhere deep down inside is I had a feeling that my real problem was the lack of a spiritual grounding. And I had a sneaking suspicion that if anything was going to help fix me or save me, it definitely wasn't going to be any human power. And I wasn't sure about this whole God idea, but I kind of had an inkling that if there wasn't a God, that I was going to be screwed. And if there was a God, I better figure out how I could tap into that. But I didn't know how to. And so to get to the C, you know, God could and would if you were sought. So I wasn't sure if God would, but I knew some other people who were just as messed up as me that had gotten sober through AA. And so I thought, well, maybe if those people could get it, maybe there's a chance for me. I'm not sure. I don't know if I'm the type of person that's ever going to be able to change my life to get out of this. I was addicted to the lifestyle that I was in. And I didn't know if I was the type of person that could change and get sober. But I thought maybe if those people could do it, there was a chance for me too. And so that's the attitude I came into AA with the last time. And so, so that's all I have on that.
Awesome. We're going to continue on page 60. Being convinced we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In making these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. Melissa?
So, wow, this was me to a T, this actor. My life revolved around my expectations for other people and for myself. And I thought I had complete control over all of that, which saying those words out loud right now would just make me want to crawl on the ground and laugh hysterically because it's just insane. Like, I don't know what I was thinking or how I ever thought that was how life was going to be lived successfully. It worked for a little bit, but when I go back in and really dive deep and look at it, it was working because I was convincing myself it was working at the time. I would shift and change myself to fit situations so it fit in my mind. My marriage, for one, was a great example of that. I had told myself I would be married by the time I was 28 and, you know, spend some time doing the grown-up stuff, traveling, doing all the fun stuff in life, and then I'd settle down and have a family and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, at 27, I wasn't even dating someone, so I had to, like, get on the stick and met my ex-husband. Obviously, that didn't work out. And proceeded to basically just get married to check the box that I had set for myself in life. And the poor man, you know, he put up with a lot in the 4 years that we were married, and he's a nice, decent guy, and I put him through hell, although I blamed him for my alcoholism at first, until I realized that I'm fully responsible for my own behaviors and actions, but that's beside the point. When you go back to the first part of that, being convinced we were at step three, we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. First of all, I didn't understand God. And secondly, how am I supposed to turn my will and my life over? What does that mean? My sponsor, when we read this, I have will and life underlined and two different words. I have thoughts and actions. So my will are my thoughts and my life are my actions. That I can kind of grab onto. And as far as the God that I understood, I was so lost. You know, I grew up in the Catholic Church. I went to church until I was about 16. I've been through all the stuff that goes along with that. And, you know, I didn't not believe in God, but God just didn't have a place in my life at all. Once I became an adult, I was completely running on my own self-will. And so I didn't really know what to do or where to go with that. You know, the term God-fearing is what would pop into my mind when someone would talk about God. And I was just like, how can I possibly do business with something that I'm fearful of? Which I'm fearful of a lot of stuff, which I learned in step four. And my sponsor was just like, can you just say that you're not God? Like, we'll just start there and work with that. And I was like, all right, fine. I guess I can go with that. But, you know, back to this paragraph about the actor and the traits, the kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. Absolutely. I was that way. If you did what I wanted you to do, you know, if I saw you were trying, you know, I would be nice, but catch me on a bad day. And the others, you know, the mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest, the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, if I'm not getting my way, if my shoelace broke, if my pen snapped, you know, that was me. I was never satisfied, ever. Even when I thought I was getting what I wanted, when I got it, it really wasn't what I wanted. And now I want this. And that was with everything. And the older I got, the worse that got. And the only thing that could really shut that down and shut that off was drinking, was drowning that out. It was the only thing I could get my head to shut off. And then that didn't work either. So again, like I, you know, said in those first few in the ABCs, I couldn't do this. Nobody else could do it for me. I couldn't do it because of someone else. So God was kind of the last stop for me. And I wasn't real sure about things. I'm a very black and white person. My sponsor frequently tells me I need to start living in the gray area. And this was really, really difficult for me to not have, you know, spelled out for me on a piece of paper and a picture that I could look at what God was. The concept of it's just whatever you want it to be it just baffled me. I think that's it.
Thank you, Laura.
Yeah. Well, I gotta tell you, I've been sober for 12 years and I still struggle with wanting to be the actor and the director and arranging everything. I wake up like that. It's gotten better. I'm better at not necessarily stopping it when it's happening, but like taking a step back after I'm in it and I'm like, ooh, okay, I'm doing it again. But man, like I was born like this. Like in my defense, I was basically raised as an only child, the baby and the only girl in the family. And so I was used to, you know, getting what, you know, just running the show. And with my friends, I was famous for being like, if you don't do this, then I'm not going to be your friend anymore. Like I would do that to people, you know, like give them ultimatums. And, you know, I always thought that my ideas were the best ideas. And if they didn't want to play and do what I wanted to do, then I was like, what's wrong with you? I just didn't understand. Like nobody ever taught me how to like share and like play well with others. I didn't learn that. So, you know, those makings for a great alcoholic. But you know, how to turn my will and my life over to the care of a God that I don't understand. I don't know. Basically do the opposite of whatever my first instinct is, probably. But yeah, this is what my life looks like when I'm running it the way that Laura thinks that it's supposed to be, you know, run, not just for myself, but for everybody that's in my life, you know, if I've graced you with my presence, that I'm in collision with something or somebody. It's usually a matter of time before I'm in collision and I don't understand why. And I'm trying to live by self-propulsion, which I have written down as the action of driving or pushing myself forward. And that's what I do. Like I get an idea in my head. This is what I want to do. I want these people to cooperate. And then I go for it. And I think that everybody else is going to, you know, be just as excited about my idea as I am. And then when they're not, I'm like, what? What's the problem here? And then I get pissed, angry, indignant, self-pitying, all these things. Oh, woe's me. My friends suck. I don't have any friends. My boyfriend sucks. My parents suck. My brothers suck. Like that's just me. And then I'm like, you know, then I don't want to play with anybody anymore. And I take my toys and I go home. So yeah, the show doesn't come off very well for me. And then I like come up with other ways. So if like being nice about it's not working, then I get angry and then I'll start blaming and I'll say like the problem is really you. And you know, that doesn't make for a very peaceful environment. People don't like that. So then I don't understand why I end up alone. Nobody will talk to me anymore. So then it's like, I can keep living my life like that. And for me, when I get myself in these positions, and like I've admitted in sobriety, I still can do this. I have but two options at the end of that. Either I'm so frustrated, I'm so stressed out, I'm so upset that I got to pick up a drink again and I'm going to drink at it, or I accept spiritual help, you know? And so this is showing me like specifically how I live my life. This is how well Laura is doing running the show. And although it might start to look good, it always ends in disaster. So either I'm going to keep doing it my way, or you're going to slowly introduce me into this whole new way of living and being and learning how to make peace with people and cooperate and like yield. There's a concept. Yield to what somebody else wants to do. Huh? That's funny. So anyway, I'm still learning to do that, by the way. I'll stop there.
Oh my God, you're killing me, Laura. I love when the other children don't want to do what I want to do. My only conclusion is, what's wrong with you? Oh, excuse me. Page 62, we're going to continue. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. Oh, sorry, I didn't share that. Melissa.
Thanks, David. So when I was going through this part with my sponsor, like this part of my book is pretty much everything's underlined or highlighted, and I have all kinds of writing in the margins. And I was that person that when my sponsor was like, bring a dictionary when we start reading the book, I was offended. I was like, who, what, bring a dictionary? Like, I'm smart. I have a degree in English. Like, come on now. And I have all kinds of definitions written down in this book, because when I think I know what something means, it's usually the complete opposite. So I have selfishness, the definition being written as being concerned excessively or exclusively for oneself or one's own advantage, pleasure, or welfare, regardless of others. And that was absolutely true for me. You know, I would try to convince myself or convince you that I was helping you just out of the goodness of my heart, but there was always an ulterior motive. I was either trying to get something from you or getting brownie points for the future for when I screwed something up. And then I needed to be able to say, well, remember when I did this for you, can't you just, you know, let this one slide? You know, and it was all centered around fear. Like it goes on to say, driven by 100 forms of fear. I didn't think I was scared of much, but it truly, I'm scared of a lot of things. You know, I'm afraid of being alone in life. I'm afraid that you're not going to like me. I'm afraid that, just afraid of a lot of things. And it came out as, let me suck up to you. Let me do all this stuff for you. I read a book or had someone introduce me to a phrase, you know, or a concept of wearing a mask or being a chameleon. When I sat down with my sponsor and we got to this part, she asked me questions. She's like, who are you? And I couldn't answer that question. Like, I'm 30 some years old and I can't even answer a basic question of who I am. I have no idea who I truly am, because I've been playing this part and this role for my entire life, just trying to fit in where I thought I needed to fit in. And I never ever felt like I fit anywhere until I actually came to AA. And I heard people share that in the beginning and I'm like, oh, that's bullshit. Like, you're just trying to say that to get me to stay, or you don't really believe that. And it's true. I've never come to a place where I feel completely comfortable in my own skin and I can share whatever I need to share with someone. And yeah, they might think I'm a little crazy, but they don't, you know, they don't judge me for it. You know, I'm welcome. I'm accepted for who I am. And that's deep down what I've always sought my entire life and never felt that I had, which is crazy. You know, I come from a very tight knit family and my family loves me unconditionally. And it's me. It's not them. It's me. All of this has to do with me. And you know, bringing it back to this selfishness and self-centeredness, like that's just everything I did in life was centered around what can I get out of it? How's it going to make me feel? And I, you know, when you told me that was my problem, I had no idea what to do to stop doing that. I still don't know how to stop doing that today. You know, I do a lot of praying. I do a lot of asking and talking to other people and getting suggestions, and little by slowly that selfishness does fade away, but it's real easy for it to crop back. You know, pretty much every morning I wake up with the first thoughts are, oh, what am I going to do today for me? Not what am I going to do today for someone else? And then I have to come back to earth and, you know, say the prayer that we're going to talk about in a little bit, and recenter myself. You know, and it says in here, God makes this all possible. And again, I'm still real teeter-totter on that God thing. I still don't get it. I really don't, you know, and I just, to be completely honest, the first time I went through this with my sponsor, this was a lot of checking a box. The way I've really been able to dive deep into step three is, one, practicing it in my life pretty much on a daily basis. I'm not going to say daily because I'd be lying. But going to big book studies, reading this with other people, taking other people through this book and having conversations about it. And every time I read these paragraphs, something new comes up or something like another light bulb gets turned on. So if you're new and this stuff is like, I don't even have a clue what you're talking about, or I don't get it, I'm not digesting it, don't feel bad. You're not the only one, I assure you. And if you want to talk about it, I'm more than happy to talk about with you later. So that's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Melissa. Laura?
Oh, yeah. The first time this passage was revealed to me, it was like a really bitter pill for me to swallow, because I was certain that there had to be some situations in my life, in my past especially, where this couldn't be the truth. But when it tells me to look at where I made decisions based on self, even in the past, it might not seem like it's related to that moment, to where I'm hurt, but to go and look, trace back and see where I was making decisions that were either out of fear or, you know, trying to get something to my benefit. And, you know, I arranged things and I put myself in a position where, you know, I let people hurt me. And I could see that. I didn't want to at first, but I was like, yeah, I can see, had I turned left that day instead of turning right, and I went with those people instead, then I would have had a totally different outcome. But the truth of this, I mean, this truly is the root of my troubles. It always has been. The fact that I am driven, and I love that it uses that adjective, I am driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. And I'm like that because of just what I taught myself growing up. You know, like I, for whatever reason, you know, I assigned a role to myself in this world and a role to everybody else. And I have been playing that role this entire time. And I learned along my journey things that I could do to protect myself. So when something bad would happen, I'd be like, whoop, okay, that means I got to do this. And then I build up my wall of armor, and I learned these things that I think are helping me survive and not get hurt anymore. And I'm protecting myself, you know, and alcohol was a part of that protection. Trying to be a badass, that was another form of thinking I was protecting myself from getting hurt any further. The people that I surrounded myself with, you know, like if I thought that somebody was tough and nobody would mess with them, I was like, I want to be around you so that I can feel that way. I want to feel powerful. And the whole reason I was like that was because I was terrified. I was terrified growing up. You know, people were trying to destroy me. Like, kids are mean, you know, especially teenagers. And I had a really rough time, you know, and I didn't know how to deal with that stuff. But, you know, along the way, I start learning all these coping strategies that I think are working for me. And then I start, you know, that's just normal. It's normal for me to live this way. Always, like, checking my back, always thinking, like, what are you up to? You're going to do something to hurt me. Like, I just know it. I don't trust anybody. And so, you know, I get into Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm sober. So now I can't use that as a protection, but I still have all these other things, these other defenses in me that do not go away overnight. And so I continue to react to situations in sobriety, and I continue to step on people's toes, not even knowing most of the time. And then they retaliate, and then I don't understand why. And then I'm just like, what the hell is the point of all of this? You know, I thought we're all supposed to be sober and happy and getting along and everybody loves each other. And it's just not like that all the time. And then I have to look back at this, you know, my trouble is basically of my own making. I am self-well-run riot. I am basically the queen of a self-imposed crisis. That's me. You know, I like to sabotage things. When things are going great, I have to go and mix it up because there's a deep-rooted belief in me that I don't deserve good things. I don't get good things. Good things don't happen to me. And so I live my life like that. And it's not conscious. It's an unconscious thing for me, at least. And so that makes for a rough going at life. And, you know, so now it's telling me that I have to try to be the opposite of this. I have to not let my fears drive me anymore. My desires, the things that I want. I have to learn to set all that stuff aside and invite God into being the co-creator of my life. And I don't know how to do that. You know, and then just the fact, like this part when it says like we cannot entirely get rid of our selfishness, which is so true. And it reminds me of, you know, when I used to hear people say when they're talking about character defects that I'm working on my character defect. I'm trying to get rid of this character defect. And I had a wise person tell me that that's not what happens. Like, we don't work on them. We can't do anything about them. In fact, I've been trying to fix my personality defects for a very long time, and they're not going anywhere. They're probably getting worse, right? And so this is just like with my drinking. I couldn't just snap away my obsession to drink. It didn't go away like that for me. Like, it was something that happened that transformed me, which I believe had to have been a higher power, because I gave all of my power at trying to outgrow drinking and to just not want it anymore. And I couldn't do it. It was always there. It always came back. And it's the same thing with my personality defects. I can't do anything about them, but what I can do is get fed up with myself, right? I can get fed up and it becomes objectionable to me, and I'm humbled. I'm again brought to my knees and I say, God, you got to do something about this. Like, do something about me, please. Because I can't live like this anymore. It's not fun anymore. I'm hurting people. I'm angry all the time, but really I'm just sad. I'm scared. And if I don't want my life to look like that also in sobriety, then I got to get to my wit's end with myself. And I need to ask God to help get in there and rearrange me from the inside out. So I don't have to be like this anymore. I don't have to protect myself anymore. That God can. I can start trusting God to protect me. Anyway, that's all I have.
Page 62. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. Melissa.
This is a powerful paragraph, and I know it's not in the reading, but this next paragraph I think is important too. I'm going to read it real quick. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, and we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter, we were reborn. That right there, that's what I want. That's where this convinced me. I wanted peace of mind. I hadn't had peace of mind for so long, probably since I was a little kid and don't really remember. I wanted to be able to face life successfully. Like, on paper, I looked successful, but inside I was absolutely not. I wanted to lose my fear, and I can't do any of this. I'm convinced of that now at this point. But, you know, you guys are telling me over and over and over again, if I trust this higher power thing, if I let God, you know, do his thing, and if I start doing for God, that things are going to get easier, not necessarily easier, but things are going to ease a little bit. Things are going to start, you know, I'm going to be able to be a little graceful in life. I've always wanted, like Laura talked about drinking like a lady. I've always wanted to be that graceful lady. I am not. I'm a klutz and I do nothing gracefully. And to be able to live like that is an incredible gift today. I'm not graceful all the time. I muck stuff up all the time, but to even have a little piece of that is so hopeful. This paragraph gives you hope that things can get better. And, you know, like I said, you know, when I was new and going through this, it was still pretty fuzzy and I wasn't willing a lot of the time to wrap my head around a lot of this. But the more time I get under my belt, and the more I really start believing and having faith in my higher power that this is going to work, I see the manifestation all the time, all around me. I never thought I was that type of person that had burning bush moments. You know, the back of the book and the spiritual experience, it talks about the, I can't even quote it right now. The intellectual variety or the educational variety. Like I was the educational variety. I had to read a lot and write a lot and have it pointed out to me that I'd had a spiritual experience. Today, that's not the case. And I completely relate that to continuing to turn things over more and more and more to my higher power. And I don't even mean like just the good things that happen in life, like the capability to handle the bad shit that gets thrown at me sober. You know, relatives passing away, jobs lost. Those are all things that have happened to me in sobriety. And it's not been a crisis. It's not been life ending. It's not been something I needed to drink over. Whereas before, like that would have been just devastating. And the crazy thing is, because I just chose to take that as it came at me and trusted that God had my back and would had something in store for me, the things that have come my way since then are just incredible. You know, I'm 40 years old and I started back to school in January. Who knew a pandemic was going to come and that, you know, I was going to have more time to actually focus on school. And, you know, that just came about crazy. It's just every day things happen in my life that there's no way that I could have made that happen. There has to be something working in my life that's forcing that, you know, to happen down that path. One of my favorite things to say is I wake up with a plan, God laughs and then puts his plan into play. And that's so true. Like even with the pandemic, like I've got a plan. I've got this plan for school. I've got the next 18 months of my life planned out to the T, and pandemic threw a crink in it. And it may not happen that way. And, you know, I definitely got in a twist about it for a little bit. I'm still kind of in a twist about it, to be honest. I'm coming down the backside of it, but I have to go back again and look and see those experiences that I've had where I thought, oh great, my plan's shot to hell. And God's always stepped in and had something in store for me that's turned out to be pretty amazing. So reading about it and hearing other people talk about it, you know, planted the seed for me. But as I'm having these experiences on my own and in my own life, that's when, you know, the proof is in the pudding for me. As I see these things happening in my own life, it convinces me that, okay, there is some merit to this. This stuff does actually work. So that's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks, Melissa. Laura?
So my first instruction for step three is, first of all, I have to complain God, which is, that's no fun for me because I secretly want to be God and I want to know what everybody's thinking and what they're doing. I want to be the fly on. I want to know everything. But the reason why I want to know everything is because I think it's somehow going to help me out, you know, help me prepare myself for whatever's happening next. So this is really challenging for somebody like me. But to admit that it doesn't work is pretty easy for me. I can definitely say that, because every time I try to play God, it ends in disaster. So this is asking me to switch my role in my life. I'm no longer the boss. I'm no longer calling all the shots. I have to, whether I believe it or not, imagine that I am the direct report to God, my higher power, master of the universe, whatever you want to call it. And I got to check in with this. And it's interesting, because like, I've never really had an issue with believing that I've always wanted to desperately believe that there's a higher power, but I even had some thoughts like, what if I'm wrong? What if everybody's wrong? And what I came to for myself in sobriety was like, you know what? I don't care if I'm wrong. Like I would rather live the rest of my life believing that there is a higher power that's got my back, that wants to help me if I ask for it. I'd rather live the rest of my life acting like that than continuing to behave the way I've been doing it this entire time. So if I die and find out that I was wrong and that there really isn't this higher being that was listening to my cries the whole time, oh well, at least I tried. And the way that I imagine it too is like, you know, for myself at least, I don't follow the advice that I give to others, but I try to imagine it, you know, like if I had a kid, if I had a little baby Laura and I saw her about to do what she was about to do, and I'm like, wait, no, don't do that. That's horrible. You know, like I imagine that's like what God is looking down at me every time I come up with these freaking grand ideas that I think are going to get me what I want. And what I want is just to feel good all the time. Right. Or to be in control, because I think it's going to make me feel better. And like when I meet girls and my friends and I listen to them, and it's so very easy and so very clear to me the direction that they should and shouldn't go in. But when it comes to applying it to myself, I'm like, what, you know? So I try to look at my higher power as like a parent, really, for me, or a mentor, like somebody that can see the bigger picture and can see through my insanity, my delusion about life. And is trying to buffer and is trying to say like, let's not do that today, Laura. Let's try something different. And if you can just do the opposite of what you normally do, maybe things will actually work out this time. Maybe. And the times that I'm able to do that and get out of the way and just like pause, for me to pause takes tremendous effort. But when I can pause and when I can ask God to come in and invite him into my whole life, not just, you know, the drinking part, I'm good. Like the obsession has been removed, but I need God in all the rest of the areas of my life too, not just with alcohol. Because it's the rest of the stuff that's going to drive me back to alcohol if I don't get, you know, a handle of it, learn how to cooperate. So for me to act like I'm a child that needs coaching and mentoring and life advice, to treat it like that has been helpful to me with this whole God idea. And, you know, the promise that it's going to be the path to freedom. Like, that's what I want. I've been a prisoner to myself this entire time. I didn't have a way out. My way out was to check out, you know, mentally. And that's not working anymore. Like, that's killing me. So this is promising me that if I can just try this way out, I will have freedom. Freedom from myself, freedom from my misery, from the awful way that I think that causes how I feel, that makes me want to destroy everything. So I'm into that. I'm into that step three. That's it.
Thank you. I am afraid. I should just stop there. I'm afraid we're out of time. So let's do this all together. Page 63, we were now at step three. Many of us said to our maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy love, thy power, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we are ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning. Thank you, Melissa and Laura. That was fantastic. I am going to share the PayPal link. In accordance with the seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential. At every level of AA service, it is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety, your safety is important. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements for the good of AA tonight? I'll take a couple. While I'm waiting for the hands to go up, simple actions. We've got a speaker / Ask It Basket meeting up on Sunday nights at 7 p.m. Next Sunday, we have Angie M. from Tobaccoville, North Carolina. Looking forward to that. And I don't see any other announcements. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. A word about sponsorship. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, please hang out in the room. We're not going to run off right after the meeting. And if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Again, I'd like to thank our panel again, Laura and Melissa. That was amazing. Thank everyone who participated tonight. And could I have a volunteer to read the last three paragraphs on page 164, please? Jessica? Jason?
Let me unmute in both places. Jessica, alcoholic. Jessica. This is a vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you charge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you so much. So let's all form a virtual circle and stay muted or unmute as you see fit for the Lord's Prayer. Do we have a moment of silence to be with as you wish? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.